Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for February 5th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the energy market with Harry Cooney of Growmark in Bloomington, Illinois. In agricultural news, a bipartisan group of U.S. senators is calling on the Obama administration to quickly develop new rules regarding country of origin labeling. We'll have that and other stories. Also, Todd Gleason will be by with another in our series on defining marketing terms. And Don Day will have agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Here are your last trades and settlements for this Tuesday afternoon. Last trades for Kansas City wheat, March contract, 806 and a quarter, down 10 and three quarters. July, 826, down 11 and three quarters. Settlements in the Chicago wheat pit, March, 757 and a half, down five and a half. July, 768 and a half, down seven and a half. Settlements in corn, March corn, 729, down five and a quarter. July, 722, down five and a half. December 590, down 3 and 3 quarters. Settlements over in the soybean pit as well. March at 1495 and a half is up 6 and 3 quarters. July 1476 and a half up 6. And November 1348 and a quarter up 4 and a quarter. Settlement in the March soybean meal at 438.50 is up 420. March soybean oil settled at 52.98, down 13 cents. February live cattle, last trade here, 127.57 and a half up 50. March feeders, 148.57 and a half down 30. And February lean hogs, last trade of 88.20, and it is up 12 and one half. And those are your last trades and settlements from Chicago and Kansas City.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Taking a look at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says little to no rain in Argentina into the weekend will further stress unirrigated crops that failed to receive significant rain last weekend. Showers advertised for Argentina late this weekend and into early next week will not likely have a huge relieving impact on the nation's dryness problem. The bottom line remains good for most of Brazil's main crop areas, however, during the coming week. Greater rain is needed from portions of Rio Grande do Sul and western Mato Grosso do Sul, where a little yield reduction may occur soon without some improved soil moisture. Better rain and snow potentials may evolve in U.S. hard red wheat country in the central U.S. plains for February 10th and 11th. Moisture totals of 5/100ths to 3/10ths of an inch will occur in northwestern crop areas, while southeast crop areas sees 3/10ths to 1 inch of moisture.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is John Hester of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Wayne Nelson away this afternoon. Good afternoon, John.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Doing well. Essentially, on the corn side today, where we talked about it this morning when we were speaking during the opening market report in the 9 o'clock hour, pretty much where we ended up.
Yes, I think corn went down. There may be minor support in this mid 724, 725 area, and it went down there, and it kind of stayed around there for a while, and then in the last half hour it bounced off of it 4 or 5 cents. So it's not a real good close in the corn, but I still think I'm still reasonably friendly old crop corn, because I think there will be a shortage of it down the road at some point in time.
What would change your mind on being friendly old crop corn?
I guess if the United States would start importing corn from South America or some other country that had a good corn crop. But, I just think that I just question how much old crop corn is really left in the United States at this point in time, because I know that for June and July around here, they're bidding 45 to 55 over for corn. So that leads me to believe they're trying to get their hands on it or get corn booked, and they think there's going to be a shortage of it in the June-July corn period time.
I do know that the eastern United States has booked a lot of Brazilian corn that is still to be delivered.
Yeah, I've read that. I think that'll probably weigh on the market to a certain extent, but how much I don't know. I kind of feel like that maybe the government has underestimated our feed usage in the old corn, and when push comes to pull, that there's still going to be quite a bit of demand for old crop corn.
Turn your attention to soybeans, which spent part of the day in negative territory but managed to claw back into positive territory by the settlements.
Yeah, I think, I don't know about long term, but medium term, I think soybeans are reasonably friendly. I think we can get back maybe to 1525 to 1550, maybe 1570 in the nearby beans, depending on the weather in South America. And they're still talking shortage of rain down there till maybe the end of the month. And when that comes around, who knows how much damage will really have happened down there to their production. And it could also be that maybe hurting their corn production some too, and that might lead to helping our corn prices in the long run also.
Do you like the idea that those kind of numbers that you were speaking of, 1550, 1570, may occur in the March contract before it goes off the board, or is it more likely to happen in the May contract?
Oh, I think it's probably more than likely in the May, but, that it's going to depend on our planning and our timely planning and, the moisture that we have at that time. And it's probably not going to be straight up. It's probably going to be the roller coaster effect, maybe go up 15 cents one day, down 5 the next. And, it's going to seesaw its way up there eventually, I think.
Have you seen any of the estimates yet for Friday's WASDE report?
Yeah, I think I can put my finger on them here pretty quick.
Okay.
Give me just a second.
I think that Bloomberg probably was out with some numbers yesterday, and maybe the trade will have the main ones from DTN and Reuters maybe today or later today, but I was curious to know if you had seen some numbers, and if so, what you think of them.
Let's see. Reuters poll as trade expectation for USDA's reports Friday of Argentina corn crop at 26.2 million metric tons, down 6% from January, and still up 25% from last year. The poll pegs Brazilian corn crop at 71.2, close to January's estimate, and up 2% from last year. Soybeans, the poll sees Argentina crop at 53.1 versus 54 in January, and Brazil at 82.6, a touch above January's 82.5.
Okay, the Argentina corn number is the one that interests me because it seems as though, as you watch the board, traders are considering Argentina weather to impact soybeans, but don't seem to credit corn as much. Why is that?
You know, I think, you know, the information we get out of South America, I think, is pretty well scrutinized, and I think that probably everybody's got their eye on the bean crop right now, and they're not worrying that much about the corn crop. But I think as time goes on that, you know, it's going to swing over to the corn crop, but on, you know, their less than desired yield down there. So I think it's just a matter of time before we get around to that.
Very good. Thank you much, John.
Hey, thank you, Dave.
That's John Hester of L&M Commodities, and he is in Newmarket, Indiana. He or Wayne Nelson joins us every Tuesday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by the Illinois Pork Producers Association. Don't miss the 2013 Illinois Pork Expo, February the 5th and 6th at the Peoria Civic Center, featuring educational seminars, a trade show, and a special market outlook. On the 6th, that's moderated by me, Todd Gleason. More information at ilpork.com.
In agricultural news, a bipartisan group of 31 U.S. senators is calling on the Obama administration to develop new regulations governing the U.S. country of origin labeling system that meet objections that the World Trade Organization raised last year. A WTO appellate body found that providing consumer information on the origin of meat was legitimate. However, the body also found that the 2009 COOL rule was inconsistent with the WTO's agreement on technical barriers to trade because it made foreign products less favorable in the U.S. market. Unless the U.S. alters the offending regulations by May of this year, the WTO is likely to grant Canada and Mexico, the two plaintiffs in the case, the right to retaliate against the U.S. CME Group Incorporated plans to close the trading pits of the Kansas City Board of Trade in late June as part of the futures exchange giant's 2012 acquisition of the regional grain market. Open outcry trade in the CBOT's flagship hard red winter wheat contracts will shift to CME's Chicago-based trading floor as of July 1st. The shift signals an end to nearly 160 years of grain trading in Kansas City, Missouri. CME struck a deal in October to acquire the CBOT for $126 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The 24th annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is March 5th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And we have a dynamite lineup, including John Bondrand of Bondrand Futures, Murray Wise of Murray Wise & Associates, and University of Illinois ag economist Peter Goldsmith. Our theme this year is Strategies for Market Profitability in 2013. The cost is $25 and includes a continental breakfast and Beef House lunch. Register now at 217-333-7300 and avoid the registration line. We'll take all major credit cards. Call 217-333-7300 and we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line the day of the event. We'll be right back.
Well, it's time to define a marketing term. Commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb joins us. She believes the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices of the industry. Today, she'll help us explore two types of market analysis, fundamental and technical. Let's define both. Please, Elaine, start with technical trade.
Technical trading is chart-based trading. So you'll hear people refer to themselves as a chartist. And in this instance, they just look at a chart of prices, you know, like a stock chart or specifically a commodity chart in this instance. And if they see a pattern on the chart, they can trade with that pattern. For instance, the most basic pattern would be a trend. They might identify a higher trend in prices. Or they might see a trend change. They might see something happen. The prices may move over a moving average or under a moving average or a strength index or these measurements that they take as technical traders. And when a trend change happens, that's a trigger for them to sell. So they base all of their marketing decisions or their trading decisions based on what the charts have done, the patterns that are being formed on the chart.
And fundamental trading?
Fundamental trading is less concerned with what the chart looks like in the past and more concerned with how prices reflect supply and demand. So a fundamental picture of the economics of a market. So this can be a lot like value-based trading in the stock market where you would calculate a value of what a stock should be priced at. You could perhaps come up with some theoretical value that you feel a commodity should be priced at, and is it higher or lower than that based on what you know about supply and demand or what may change about supply and demand that you anticipate in the future?
Are there fundamentalist and chartist only in the trade?
There are some who are purely one way or the other, but I think particularly, you know, with farmers, when we're talking about marketing grain, you see people use a lot of both ideas. You may have a bias, a bullish or a bearish bias based on the fundamental analysis of the grain markets, but then choose when to sell or when to buy based on a technical signal. And furthermore, I think it's important, even if you don't necessarily believe in these chart patterns or magic numbers, to still pay attention to what the technical traders are doing, because if they do enough of it all at once, they do move the markets. So I sometimes do pay attention to the momentum that is being done by technical traders.
Are the chart patterns based wholly on mathematics, or they're just patterns that show up that people see in the charts?
Yeah, there's definitely both, Todd. Sometimes there is some mathematics being done just to calculate, you know, an average or this, but other times, you're right, it's just basically a picture on the chart. For instance, the head and shoulders pattern is something that you see sometimes, and it has some validity because you're showing the chart come up to a level and then surge up to a slightly higher level and then fall back down to that previous level, and that sort of shows the market topping out. It's a pattern of behavior, you know, when buyers will come in and then the buying interest sort of runs out. So some of these patterns, you know, really do reflect something behavioral in the markets, but sometimes they're kind of just pictures on a chart.
Are there software packages or computer-driven packages that allow the marketplace to be traded based on those particular technical trades?
Oh, absolutely. Basically, every charting software package you can get will automatically set up some of these most common chart-based patterns for you. And in fact, you can set up your entire trading program to just trade based on these technical signals, you know, without you even being involved. You can be asleep in your bed and you could be having your trading program trading based on a relative strength index or moving averages all the time.
It sounds dangerous to me.
It sounds dangerous to me too, but this certainly is happening, and I think it happens to a greater and greater degree these days. The high-frequency traders, the algorithmic traders, a lot of the volume in the markets is coming in from that kind of trade.
Thanks, Elaine. Elaine Cubb, commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Joining us for our look at the energy markets is Harry Cooney of GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Harry.
Good afternoon. Almost said good afternoon, Todd, but I guess it's Dave today.
Well, it is Dave today, and interesting enough that we were just hearing from Elaine Cubb on technical charts, because I was looking at a few for oil, and I was looking at the March chart, and I was looking at some Fibonacci retracements. And I was kind of wondering if you are in the camp that maybe oil might soften up down maybe to 93.28 over the next couple of weeks or so.
You know, I liked her talk there about being able to just lay in bed and do some of this stuff. You know, I think I might sign up for that program.
Yeah, where do I sign up for that?
Where do I sign up for that? Just what you said, though, I think has some validity. The market has rallied in crude oil from the December lows, as it seasonally should, but the seasonal rally has kind of got a little ahead of itself here. We rallied crude from 85 all the way up to 98, and yeah, I think there's some room to set back, and those setbacks somewhere in the $92 to $94 range would definitely be warranted. The uptrend would still be intact, but it would just be relaxing some of its recent price run-up. And, you know, a lot of talk has been in the past week or so here about this strong gasoline pump price, and it's kind of got ahead of itself, too. I'm hearing that different reports that suggest that gasoline normally doesn't do this. And all I can say is I look back at a study, Dave, this morning, and gasoline prices have rallied from the December lows by about 17%. But this has all happened in about a month or month and a half. I mean, it's been kind of an exciting move. The past 3 years, though, from the December lows till April 1st, last year they rallied, gasoline futures rallied 36%. In 2011, they rallied 37%. And in 2010, 28%. And again, those were from the December lows till April 1st. So we've rallied 17% here now. It's come a little faster than normal, but overall, this is what we should be doing. It's just kind of coming a little sooner than what we'd normally expected. But those numbers would suggest that we're just halfway up the rally that we normally have in the springtime.
Therefore, coming a little bit sooner than we might expect. What should producers do about locking in their diesel fuel needs? We were kind of thinking that mid-February is where the window begins to close. What are you seeing?
Well, that's right. Normally we say Thanksgiving to Valentine's Day is the window of opportunity. And all I can say is earlier in that window this year would have been better than later. Still, if you look at prices in diesel fuel, the spot price off of the tank wagon from your local FS supplier versus contracting down the road for springtime, most often, in most cases, that spot market will still be your cheapest. So if you're one of those people that didn't fill up in December, didn't need it for tax reasons, for example, or such, and you still have your tanks on empty, I would still get filled up. We just heard today also talking about some refineries up around the Chicagoland area. One of the big ones might be down a little longer this spring for maintenance than we thought, and then another one up there is going to go down for maintenance in late spring. So having supplies on hand is important. First thing I do is get your inventories filled up.
Thank you much, Harry.
Thank you, Dave.
That's Harry Cooney of GrowMark, and he is in Bloomington, Illinois. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. It's National Whipped Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1786, Thomas Nuttall was born. An English naturalist and botanist, he collected and studied plants in the U.S., especially around the Chesapeake Bay area. In 1794, Edmund Ruffin was born. He is often called the father of soil chemistry in the U.S. Ruffin showed how to restore fertility to depleted soil, and he discovered effective methods of fertilizing, plowing, and rotating crops to increase grain production. In 1889, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the word hamburger first appeared in print in a Walla Walla, Washington newspaper. In 1914, Aaron Bunny Lapin was born, an American inventor. He is the creator of whipped cream in an aerosol can. He did that in 1947. It was first sold by milkmen in St. Louis in 1948. And in 1943, George Washington Carver died, an American agricultural scientist and inventor. He developed hundreds of uses for peanuts, soybeans, and sweet potatoes. Carver demonstrated to farmers how fertility could be restored to their land by diversification, especially by planting peanuts and sweet potatoes to replenish soil impoverished by the regular growth of cotton and tobacco. And he founded the George Washington Carver Research Foundation at Tuskegee, Alabama, for agricultural research. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin in South America as we continue to debate the amount of rain that will fall in Argentina over the next 10 days. What's the latest?
The next 10 days, it's going to be more like the second 5 days of the 10 days before they've really got a good chance. While Brazil still is looking at getting some decent chances of rain, Argentina is going to have to wait. Any precipitation in the next 5 days is going to be spotty. Now, next week, we do see some weather pattern changes that are going to favor a better opportunity for Argentina to get wet, but it's all in the long term. The short term is still going to be dry.
So what are we looking at, like February the 14th, the 16th, somewhere in that window?
I would put any time after the 10th, I think conditions start to get a little bit better for them. But between now and then, it's going to be slim pickings.
And the other rain event that people are beginning to discuss is, in the near term, is rain potential in hard red winter wheat country. What do you know?
In fact, I think we have the potential is there for the best precipitation in those areas that have been so dry for a long time. We have something that we've been waiting for, a slow-moving storm coming out of the central and southern Rockies and a Gulf of Mexico that's open to allow high tropical, high moisture content air from the subtropics to come and be drawn into the storm and ahead of it. So we're looking at some real good potential for Nebraska, for Kansas, for Oklahoma, a lot of central and east Texas to pick up some good rains. Of course, as you go further north, especially Nebraska, northern Kansas, it's going to be snow. And then this system could produce significant amounts of rainfall in some of the southern areas. We could see some drought-relieving rains in Georgia. So this is an important system. It's a system that you would normally see in March. It might be a little ahead of schedule to see a system like this. But usually when you have a system like this, there's more coming. So we're encouraged by what we're seeing coming later this week and weekend.
And then what I guess weather giveth, weather also can potentially taketh away. And I'm thinking about the western U.S. plains, southern U.S. plains, where the temperatures are warmer than normal.
But they will get colder. So this warm-up is not going to last too long. They will see colder weather come in behind the system. In fact, there's some potential for some really cold air to still invade the United States this month. And when you get a slow-moving system like this, out ahead of it, you have southerly flow that does warm things up, but that also helps tap that Gulf of Mexico moisture. So you sort of need to have that big warm-up ahead of these big lows to get a good precipitation producer.
And what is your greatest concern looking at all weather fronts around the globe at the moment?
Well, let's certainly hope that this southern plain, central plain system comes together, because I do think it'll play an important role for the rest of this month and into early March. And, of course, if you look around the globe in the northern hemisphere, still pretty cold and wintry in Europe, and that trend will continue.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.